Princess Galeriano, he has decisions in all appearances except for the one where he lasted a third of an inning and gave up 5 runs.
You heard that perfectly, right? No problem.
As long as I don't have to understand him, I'm good. But yeah. I did hear him.
It's all about those padded video game stats.
I'm gonna say, what are you doing, man? And welcome to Artificial Turf Wars, episode number 54, where we would also use Kevin Pillar's bat if called upon to pinch hit. I am your host, Greg Wisniewski, and I am joined tonight by Josh Housam. How you doing, Josh?
Not too bad. You?
I'm doing well because we can talk about more than one win this week. We will get into the actual winning of games, talk about Kevin Pillar and Justin Smoke somehow being the driving force of this offense. Roberto Osuna not having the best week of his life. And then, of course, we still do have some of those original starting pitchers left. We'll talk about how they did this week. And then there have been 3, as I count them, kind of unusual, interesting slash crazy plays that are worth a few seconds of chit-chat by themselves. So we start with the Jays having got, oh, and then after that, I apologize, we're going to play Swing and a Drive with a special guest. We are going to take your questions and hand out a gold star. So the Jays have gone from abysmal to middling, which I guess is a really good thing at this point.
To truly mediocre.
Literally, as we had just discussed, you and I, before coming on, they are 4 wins and 4 losses since our last podcast, and you can't get any more mediocre than 4-4.
Nope. Sorry about that.
No problem. Happens to the best of us.
Yeah.
So the Blue Jays split a series in Anaheim. They lost the last game in Boston, which happened after we recorded, or against Boston, not in Boston, after we recorded. The first game in Boston against Boston, and somehow they won two extra inning games on the road.
Yeah,
that's the only thing that wasn't mediocre. I always think when a team goes in extra innings on the road, mentally I'm like, okay, you've lost this game. It's just how many innings it will take. I know that's not true. That's just sort of my mental block. I hate extra inning games on the road.
Well, I mean, the Jays did lose the first 2 of them they played this season, and then they lost their first extra inning game at home. But that's because all they did was lose at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, it's hard to pick those out of the just wall of losses that came crashing down upon us as the season started. So some of this success has been due to Kevin Pillar. How's Kevin Pillar done this?
Well, this is not something I think any of us but you know, it's he said he was going to work hard on this. You know, he just decided not to swing a pitch out of the zone anymore, and we're all like, okay, well, let's see how he does it in the regular season. Well, we're 20 games in. He's hitting .296 with a .337 on base and a .494 slugging, and he has 3 walks, which is for him high, but the difference is he's not chasing pitches out of the zone. Kind of helps.
Yeah, and a lot of people were critical of him because he did not walk. And he walked once, like in the first game of the season, I think.
Yeah, second at bat,
and then he didn't walk for like 2 weeks. But he never talked about walking specifically when he was talking about that approach, to be fair to Mr. Pillar. He said what you said: I'm not going to chase pitches out of the zone. So I think of it more as I'm not going to strike out so much, and my contact is going to be better contact. And if you take it in that context, he seems to be doing exactly that.
Yeah, I mean, you can't complain with 3 home runs, a triple, 5 doubles. I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and at some point, after the first of the month, so we have a whole month's sort of numbers to look at, I'm planning it going back to some of the new StatCast stuff, which will tell us with a little more precision, apparently, just how hard is he hitting the ball, compared to how he previously hit the ball. But there's really not any point in doing it until you've got a certain number of plate appearances under the belt, because it could be a habit that he gets back out of. We're not sure. So far, so good. Also, so far, so good for Justin Smoke, who was much maligned by us over the course of the offseason. And playing every day certainly seems to have helped Mr. Smoke, if we could assign a cause to it.
Yeah. I mean, he started off and we're like, oh, God, Smoke, get him out of the lineup. Because his first, was it, 9 games, he was hitting .208 with a .240 on base, .292 slugging. It's like exactly what we feared. Well, actually, probably even worse than we feared. And then, since then, he's been the kind of hitter that they hoped. I mean, obviously, these are really, really cherry-picked samples, but over the last 11 games, hitting .306 with a .359 on base and a .667 slugging, which gives him a .313 on base and .517 on slugging on the year. But he's hitting well for both sides of the plate. He's hitting for power, and that's been always the thing. Is he's had this struggles getting to his power, but he's been hitting the ball well. He even has a triple.
Yeah, I got to look at the replay on that one to see where he actually hit that ball too. Not 100% sure that was your traditional triple, but maybe that's just getting stuck in my head. Because I've seen him run, and it does not strike me that the actual running speed was helping him get the triple. We had talked about 2015 Justin Smoke was not the end of the world. And at the moment, I believe he's even better than, the last couple weeks have been better than 2015 Justin Smoke, which he's going to go up and down. Don't think we expect him to slug .600 for the rest of the year.
No, but it's nice to see that at least something in the faith has been rewarded. I mean, he still struck out 14 times, but 14 times in 64 plate appearances, it's a lot, but it's not egregious, which is what we had come to expect from Justin Smoke.
The Blue Jays, as a team against Chris Sale, I'd just like to bring this up. Did they not strike out in 50% of their plate appearances against Sale?
It sounds accurate.
That is ridiculous. It's just, there's no... I don't have any other word I need to add to that. Ridiculous. You should not... I don't understand how baseball's going in this direction continuously, but obviously it is, and it's a really weird direction for it to go in. His contact is not important.
Yeah. And by the way, just before we leave Justin Smoke, one of the interesting things about his success, Steve Pierce has sat for 3 straight games because Ezekiel Carrera is also hitting .306.
Oh, man.
And Steve Pierce is not.
Yeah, Steve Pierce did not come as advertised.
So far.
So far. You never know. But yeah, he's had a... There are some people who are not well-versed at all with Steve Pierce's history, which I understand because he's been a part-time player. And as we know, he's never played a full season, in the bigs where he wasn't injured. So he's not the kind of guy who shows up on any leaderboards, because after 80 games, you can have a great batting average and great slugging percentage, but you don't ever show up because you can't accumulate any totals. So people who don't know him are like, oh my God, Steve Pierce is up again. And had you only seen Blue Jay Steve Pierce, I would be with you 100%.
Yeah. And he's an OPS plus of 7.
Well, he didn't break the metric. That's good.
Well, yeah, it's funny. Among Blue Jays, that puts him 3rd worst. Travis is at 3 now. He's in the positives at least.
Yay!
And Jared Saltalamacchia is at -74.
Can we talk about Jared Saltalamacchia for a minute?
Go for it.
How many days? Okay, first of all, I got to talk about Russell Martin at third base, which is not one of the weird plays which we had on our list. Russell Martin at third base is apparently so you can keep Russell Martin's bat in a lineup because he's hot, which sounds good on the face of it, but then you realize the actual cost of that is putting Jared Saltalamacchia's bat in the lineup over Chris Coughlin's. What?
Well, I think I think that partially it was so they could just let Martin not be crouching behind the plate for the entire game. But holy crap, has Alton Lamacchia been bad?
He struck out 10 times in a row, the Blue Jays record.
64% of his plate appearances overall, which is Byron Buxton territory, which we discussed last time.
64%! I would think that if you had struck out 8 or 9 times in a row, that the next plate appearance, your entire being would be devoted to simply not striking out. just to avoid the ignominy of of showing up. Ignominy of showing up on this list of people who could not stop swinging at nothing. Wow. Yeah. Uncle Salty. So how do you, but the Blue Jays have no other option, right? They traded Juan Graterol, who was their maybe option, to the Angels. They DFA'd AJ Jimenez. They DFA'd him before the season started. So who's the Blue Jays' third catcher?
Luke Maley, who they picked up from the Rays.
Is he excellent?
Well, I mean, he's not 14 strikeouts and 22 plate appearances.
Also, it would probably help if Salty Lamacchia was a somewhere superlative defensive catcher, but he's not a great catch and throw guy, and he doesn't appear to be a great framer. He needs to hit something.
Yeah, I mean, his calling card has always been power. And, well, you got to hit the ball to generate power.
Get right down into it. All right, that was a little tangent on Salty Lamacchia. Also, I think getting Russell Martin's bat into the lineup for one extra day so he can twist his ankle at third base because he's not used to it is not where I want Russell Martin when you have Coughlin, Barney, Goins, and Travis as infielders on this roster, and many, many ways to deploy them. Yeah. I'm not a fan of that decision. Anyway.
Fair enough.
You want to tell me about what we're supposed to do about Roberto Osuna and his inability to have a nice 1-2-3 inning save?
Or just not give up a run?
Well, yeah. That'd work, too.
He's given up runs in 3 of his 5 outings. He's given up base runners in all of them. It's hard to say. I mean, there's some weird things going on with Osuna. His velocity is down by over a mile per hour. And he's completely altered his pitch mix. Roberto Osuna has always been heavy four-seam fastballs. And then he mixes in like a decent amount of sliders, the second pitch, and then he throws some changeups and then mixes in cutters. This year, the pitch he's throwing the most often is a sinker, a two-seam fastball, and I don't really understand why. It's averaging 94.97 miles per hour, whereas his four-seam fastball usually averages 96.6.
And it's not working.
No. 32.5% sinkers, 25% cutters, and then 27.5% four-seamers. It's really strange.
So we know he had a neck problem in spring training. We think he's over that. We also know that he had his first Tommy John surgery and his only one so far, but some guys have more than one. His first Tommy John surgery when he was in the minor leagues the first year after his debut. So we haven't heard anything else. So I don't know if we can make any conclusions at this point.
Yeah, and here's the big one, though. So I talked about how his average velocity, that's what I was using for average velocity, was down about a mile per hour. His peak velocity is down 3 to 4 miles per hour.
So he cannot chuck it up there when he needs to amp it up.
Yeah, his ability to reach back and get that, 98 to 100 mile an hour fastball to blow a guy away, he doesn't have that right now. And, with relievers, and his workload was enormous.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about this a couple podcasts ago. Mike's on and his fatigue units and all that. Osuna was near the top of the list. So, there could be some issues and some fallback this year that might not actually correct itself.
So I guess the only, I mean, you do have some apparently decent arms out there in the bullpen if Osuna is struggling. The question is, how much do you let him struggle before you ease up on his workload or change his role, I guess, is the difficult decision to make.
Yeah, and I think there has to be some actual discussion, too, about this pitch mix. I mean, I'm assuming they're doing it because of the lost velocity. But when a guy's been so successful doing it one way, I don't really get doing it the other way until he starts getting hit that way.
Maybe it hurts when you do it the other way.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I actually really noticed this during that first Red Sox game when he they was 0-0, that Chris Sale game. It was 0-0 when he came in, and he gave up a run, and then the Jays tied it at the bottom, and then they lost in extra innings. But he was getting guys with two strikes and throwing sinkers, like high, they're not really sinkers, they're just two-seam fastballs, but high two-seam fastballs for strikes to try to get strikeouts. But that's not a strikeout pitch.
No, people foul that pitch off because it's not sinking out of the zone, right?
Right, exactly. And then and sometimes they'll just drive it the other way for a hit because it's coming back towards their bat.
And you would so, think, yeah, why would Martin call for that pitch? There's got to be something there. Yeah,
I don't know. It's very confusing.
Yeah, he's not a dumb guy.
No, very much not. So I would actually be very curious to get an answer as to why they're throwing that way.
So let's talk now about starting pitching. Because the guys who are left in the rotation, which is to say Stroman and Liriano and my name
Marco Estrada
have really been continuing to be quite, I think, steady is a underestimation of what they've been. There have been moments where they've been straight up lights out.
Yeah, I mean, so Stroman, so we're going back to the since we've recorded this, he beat up by Boston. 6 runs, 4 2/3, 11 innings. I mean, 11 hits. But otherwise, he's thrown 2 complete games in which he's given up 1 run, or 1 earned run and 2 earned runs, and then he gave up 1 earned run in his other start. So he's been excellent.
Yeah.
And Marco Estrada has been excellenter. I don't know.
No complete games from Marco.
No, but he in his last 3 starts, he has given up 0-0 and 2 runs.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No.
He has no decisions in those 3 starts.
Yeah, just because you're good doesn't mean they like you.
Yeah, he's 0-1 on the season.
It doesn't even make sense. But we don't worry about wins around here at BP Toronto, so we're good.
And then there's the funny one, speaking of the decisions we don't worry about, with Francisco Liriano. He has decisions in all appearances except for the one where he lasted a third of an inning and gave up 5 runs.
Doesn't make any sense. No, it doesn't make any sense either. Team bailed you out of your worst outing of the season, which he's not his even. There's been nothing like that since then.
No, he's given up 2 runs, 0 runs, and 2 runs. He has been, like Estrada and like Stroman, really, really good.
And that's pretty much the only reason that this team is 500 since we last, you know, talked is these guys are putting up enough innings to keep the team in the game, because certainly the team is not scoring enough runs to embarrass any other pitching staff for the most part.
No, I mean, they're really not. And like, it's not, we should say it's not just the starting pitching. You touched on the relievers, but you know, Joe Smith, Dominic Leone, Joe Biagini up until his last outing, but they've been really, really excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not really worried when he has to go to the bullpen, other than Osuna, obviously, who's been having all kinds of those issues. But I figure that we can get a couple of shutout innings out of the bullpen somehow, some way. Which, early last year, that was not the case.
Last year, it was like, can anybody other than Osuna getting out?
Yeah, pretty much. So, I mean, Jason Grilley has been a problem, but I can see that Gibbons has kind of eased off on Grilley's usage now that he seems susceptible to all of the worst things that can happen to Jason Grilley, and that he knows he's got Smith and Biagini,
and Leon, I think we yeah. should include him in this list. Now, people sort of probably think of him as just a fluky, you know, upstart. Now he's not going to do anything. He's 25, and when he was 22, he put up a season of 66 innings with a 2.17 ERA and 70 strikeouts. So it's not like this is a guy who's never had success in the big leagues.
It just hasn't been consistent.
Honestly. Yeah, I mean, he was 22, right? And in his age 23 and 24 seasons, he was no good. And, you know, but it's there. Like, he has had the ability and shown the ability to get big leaguers out.
All right. So that moves us on, sorry, back to the starting rotation before we leave that completely. On the two guys who are not in the starting rotation, because I'm not even going to talk about Matt Latos. Because I don't want to. And whoever it is who they get to do the next spot start for the fifth
slot. Still Casey Lawrence.
Oh, God. Yeah, we're not going to talk about those guys. All right, what's happening with Hap?
So Hap was supposed to throw on the side and potentially come back. So just one start for Latos or Lawrence. But he had a little bit of soreness, so they're saying it's not long yet, and he's already started to throw again, but it's not as optimistic as it looks.
And then Aaron Sanchez had one of the most painful sounding things done that doesn't count as actual surgery.
Yeah, removing part of his fingernail.
Oh! Don't want to hear that. Oh, I need all my fingernail. Thank you. An attempt to avoid forming a new blister, and he seems, I guess, happy with so far the results of that.
Yeah, he's throwing, and I expect he's going to make not this next start, which is the, you know, the doubleheader with. Yeah, by the way, the doubleheader with St. Louis is going to be Latos and Lawrence on the same day.
They say it's so tough to win both ends of a doubleheader, but that really doesn't. That doesn't even cover that.
But I would expect that Sanchez will make his next start after that.
Fingers crossed. Fingernails or no. Still crossed.
Good one.
All right. There were three weird plays / rule interpretations that went on this week, so we should talk about all three of them. The first one is Stroman and the quick pitch that was, well, okay. Was it a quick pitch to you?
Well, to me, if a batter's in the box and he's, you know, standing there, you should be allowed to throw the pitch. But that's not how it's ever been interpreted. So, yes, it was a quick pitch.
Yeah, because the unfortunate, in my estimation, the unfortunate sentence in the rule is in the umpire's judgment. So, basically, I think in some cases, if the umpire isn't looking up, it doesn't matter whether the batter's not ready or not. If the umpire doesn't feel like he's ready for the pitch to be delivered, sometimes he calls the quick pitch.
Yeah.
Even and then of course, happened. Yeah, and the batter is the batter going to say no, I was ready? What kind of idiot says that? So, take advantage. Now, the problem I had was not the quick pitch call. I defended the umpire on that in that he has the leeway to make that judgment call. The problem is later in the game, the umpire called time while the ball was in the air on the way to the plate.
Mm-hmm.
What the heck, man? Like, after the windup starts, technically umpires are not supposed to call time, but it happens from time to time because communication, there's a little delay, the umpire doesn't move as fast, he's heard the request and he's thinking about it, and then he realizes the pitcher, okay, fine. But after that stride has been made, there's no way a batter should get time.
Yes, I fully agree.
So I can see where Stroman managed to not get himself thrown out of the game, but he was legitimately asking, if you tell me I pitch too fast and you're in the batter's favor, and then 3 innings later, you tell me that I'm waiting too long, and that's also in the batter's favor, what the heck's in my favor?
Yeah, exactly. And we should note this too. You know, the umpire, we're talking about how it's the umpire's discretion, but he didn't call it until he got a reaction from Cole Calhoun.
Mm-hmm.
So Cole Calhoun very much influenced the call, which with the next one you're going to talk about was the same thing. So
Interference. I'll confess, I was not awake for the interference play. I only saw various replays and freeze frames and everything else. So Travis swung through on a throw down to second and hit the catcher with the swing, the follow through on the bat, which people initially thought was where the interference call came from, to my understanding. But of course, interference of a follow through on the bat when unintentional is just a strike. You don't get called
and a dead ball.
And a dead ball. But upon further review, Travis's foot was actually on the plate, which means he was out of the batter's box, which is where you're not allowed to be when the call is made. But like you said, that was not immediately how it was called.
And your foot actually is allowed to be on the plate as long as you're not hitting the ball.
But you're... Right? Your safe space is in the batter's box when a throw is being made. So if you right. don't duck and you're completely in the box and he's throwing down to third and you're a right-handed batter, if he throws into you, too bad, you were in the box.
Right. Now, and in this case, so he swings his follow-through, takes him a little off balance, and he ends up with his right foot on the plate, but he still wasn't in the throwing lane.
Mm-hmm.
And until it, yeah, the throw went down. It was a clean throw. There was no issue until it's like, oh, complete. Oh, he was in my way. Oh, you're right. Double play or no, like automatic out.
Yeah.
And you know, that stuff just shouldn't be allowed to happen. Either the call is either you make it or you don't. You don't let the other guy determine whether you make the call, which is pretty bad.
Yeah. That's where the real problem is here is you can't umpire after some suggestions. That's why managers go out and always lose the argument, right? You can't make a suggestion and then without consulting with anybody else, just, oh yeah, you probably were right there. I'll change that. Yeah, that was some weird umpiring. The worst part is that the baseball rules are a bit nebulous at times. That sentence in the umpire's judgment comes up. And the if it was deemed intentional is another sentence that comes up more often than not in the rules. These are sentences that don't make anybody happy, in my estimation. Having done a tiny bit of umpiring, telling people that it's your judgment, nobody likes that. Because, of course, their judgment's just as good as yours as far as they're concerned.
Yep.
The last play is not really a rules violation, but wow, someday I bet it will be.
No way.
Chris Coughlin decided that the best place to be was going over top of Yadi Molina, which is just mind-blowing. You can describe this one. Go right ahead.
Oh, it's very easy. If anybody has seen Major League 2, Omar Epps' version of Willie Mays Hayes does the exact same thing to Parkman. I'm going to go over the whole play. Now, okay, you should go read Sam Miller's breakdown of everybody involved in this play because it's fantastic. We'll link it on the podcast page. But anyway, so Pilar hits this ball to right, and it's a catchable ball for Piscotty. So Coughlin is holding up at second. Piscotty, he doesn't catch it, hits the wall. Piscotty picked up the ball. Coughlin wasn't even at third base yet, and Piscotty was about halfway to the plate. Luis Rivera, bless his heart, decides to send him anyway.
He is the most curious third base coach I've ever seen to keep that job that long. I'm mystified by his sends and his stop signs, as are some of the players, if you've not noticed.
Yeah, but Coughlin's like, okay, well, maybe we'll go. And it's a terrible throw from Biscotti. It's a four hopper about 5-6 feet up the line. And Coughlin still was going to be out easily.
Yep. But
instead, he just dives over top of Yadier Molina and lands in a perfect roll on the plate and ends up on his feet.
His helmet hit the plate.
Yeah, it did.
Weird. So
it was amazing.
In so many ways. It went viral. Obviously, if you're a baseball fan, you've probably seen this play. If you haven't, it'll be easy to find.
Yep.
My heart goes out to Yadi Molina because I can only imagine, again, I have not been a catcher, but my thinking is Molina realizes that the throw is bad, but he has to get the baseball. He doesn't have a choice. And he's thinking, okay, I'm in the lane because he's looking at the foul line where the ball is. He has to know he's right in Coughlin's way. Now, the rule with the catcher is he's not allowed to block the baseline unless he's receiving the ball. So he knows there's something is about to happen. I'm sure he can hear people yelling and either Coughlin bearing down on him or Luis Rivera yelling to send him. At that point, there has to be a split second where he thinks he's going to get run over like a freight train is coming in. And he's got his head down because he can't look up because he's got to get the ball. And then nothing happened.
Just saying, you shouldn't feel for him. Then you should be really happy for him because Coughlin could have killed him.
But he's, I'm sure his mind was just like, where did he go? And what am
Which
I
way
supposed
did he
to
go, George?
And what am I supposed to do? Do I need to tag him? Did he like, he didn't go beside me. Did he really just go over top of me? Imagine he stood up at the wrong second. Coughlin would have, you're right, would have destroyed him. The fact that that play worked out the way it did is just as amazing as the fact that it entered Chris's head. Oh, yeah. I guess the best way to go is going to be over top of him. And I will land on the plate. Don't worry.
I just wish afterwards he'd said, like, hey, Willie Mays Hayes did it, so I knew I could. You know, just reference the Major League. We know you got the idea from there, Chris. Just
let us know. He referenced it in one of the post-game interviews.
Oh, he did? Oh, amazing. Did. I didn't hear that one.
He said a little, he was like a little Willie Mays Hayes for you.
Oh, perfect.
Here's another really weird little tidbit from Coughlin's, one of his quotes that I didn't realize. People asked him if he planned it. He said, no, I didn't really plan it. He said, but I know about the rules and I don't want to see really anybody get hurt because that's horrible for our game. I was on deck when Buster Posey got his leg broken.
Huh.
I did not know that at all. So Coughlin watched that happen in front of him. I bet that played more than Major League in his brain when he was going to run Molina.
Yeah, no kidding.
So there you go. Fun fact. We got all kinds of fun facts. That covers all the weirdness for the week, right?
That's a lot of weirdness, so I think it does.
All right, so we're going to leave this, and we are going to bring along our special guest, Gideon Turk, from our Patreon, and he is going to get an opportunity to play Swing and a Drive with us in just a second. We are back once again, and we have a special opportunity to play Swing and a Drive with a special guest. And our special guest joining us because on our Patreon, one of the donation levels gets you an opportunity to come on and play a game with us. So Gideon Turk joins us tonight. How you doing, Gideon?
I'm great, thanks. How are you guys?
I'm excellent.
Oh yeah, it's the best thing ever.
So Gideon has paid the fee, and as such
paid the fee. There's no fee. He donated, and we really appreciate it.
I did it solely for this. I'm just really looking forward to beating Josh. So
yeah, and I mean it's easy because it involves no skill, as we've gone over. For those of you who just started in 2016 to follow the podcast, Swing and a Drive is a game where we play the first half of Buck Martinez calling what may or may not be a home run, and our contestants have to guess whether, in fact, he's going to finish off with a home run call or something else. And when we play Swing and a Drive, it sounds a little bit like this.
Swing and a Drive!
It's got to be a home run, right?
Swing and a Drive!
That's a catch!
Swing and a Drive!
It's only a double.
And he's going to make the catch. That ball didn't carry.
Let's face it, we didn't have a clue.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up, doesn't it? All right. So the first thing I want to do is we want to just test the audio level here. Gideon, let me know, can you hear Buck here talking?
Pitching coaches, they have wish lists.
Perfect.
They have wish lists, threat lists that they want to accomplish and have their pitchers.
You heard that perfectly, right? No problem.
As long as I don't as long as I don't have to understand him, I'm good. But yeah. I did hear him.
You can understand talking about wish lists.
He's a great commentator. always enunciating perfectly and, you know, really gets you into that game.
So we're going to get things started with clip number one, and I will give you the batter. The batter is Melky Cabrera.
He's having the same kind of year. Lots of extra base hits. Deep drive to right.
Ooh, deep drive to right. Now, Josh, you've played dozens of times, so I'm going to let you take the first one here. Is that deep drive to right a home run, an extra base hit, or an out?
I think it's going to be a home run.
Josh saith home run. What does Gideon say?
I think that's an out. His voice was dying a little at the end.
Detected a little something.
He's already, look, so Gideon's already off on the wrong track. Even if he gets this one right, trying to actually analyze Buck's call, see what he's saying.
All right, that's fair. That's true.
Here we go. Part two of Melky.
I got a good angle on it. He's going to haul it in.
Oh. Yes. Okay. There we go.
There you go. There you got yourself an out. Very nice. Very nice. So one for Gideon, which means, of course, you're going to have to go first on our second clip here. So brace yourself. We have Jose Bautista.
Swinging and drive down the left field line. Christian.
So I have to include one clip that actually says swing and a drive every show just for tradition's sake. So
I'm going to assume this is pre-2017, which means he hit home runs. I'm going to say this is a home run.
All right, Josh, home run, double, out.
I think it's gone.
You also think it's gone. All right.
Looking up, this ball is gone.
It home is run, gone. Jose it is gone. Everybody gets a point. Congratulations.
See, what's funny about that one is Buck has this habit on balls hit any more close to a fence by Bautista. Swing and a drive! he just assumes Bautista hits a home run every at bat.
That's how much he loves the man. That's what it's about. It's not about the play on the field. It's about love.
I mean, it used to be like that.
Oh, man. It's the downer swing and a drive.
Help us out. All right. You can believe in whoever you want to believe in. I do not have a Kevin Pillar clip as much as I probably should.
Very rare.
That wouldn't be fair. Gideon has every single Kevin Pillar bat memorized.
Even the flyouts, of which there are many.
As long as he swings at strikes.
All right. This is Josh Donaldson.
The sixth inning on Friday. He had to face Bautista Donaldson. High fly ball. That's going to be.
Oh, so Josh, it's going to be
off the wall.
And, I mean, that's a standard Buck call. I'm going to say off the wall also.
All right.
Way back and down.
Oh.
That's there's that Homer horn. Yes, that is embarrassing. But the best part about that clip to me is if you listen to it all as one, is how much energy Buck starts with versus finishes with.
The sixth inning on Friday. He had to face Bautista Donaldson. High fly ball. That's going to be way back.
It's like I better make up for all the excitement I missed while that ball was in the air. Obviously a little deceptive one there. So it's still 2-1 for Gideon.
Damn it.
Are you ready for the next one?
I am. Am I going first now?
I believe so. This is a Russell Martin clip. Russell Martin.
Swinging a drive deep to left field. Marte.
What will Marte do?
I think he's going to catch that.
Well, I got to go different. Otherwise, Gideon can guarantee victory on the next one. So I'm going to say it's a double.
All right. So we have a double and we have an out. All right. Actual call.
Watch this one go out of the yard.
Run
for Russell Martin.
Just gonna watch it go.
What, so now I lost.
You can tie.
What did the smart play for me be to just pick whatever Josh picks here?
That's why I went different last time.
Okay. I was thinking, like, how am I supposed to guarantee myself victory? But I'm pretty sure that's the move right there.
Yes,
screw this guarantee. You play.
I'm gonna screw it up.
We play for bragging rights here.
I'm gonna
you
mess
get them
you
all
up.
Right.
I'm gonna mess you up badly.
Okay. Josh, you're going first.
Swinging a drive deep to center field.
All right. So that's part one. Josh. What do you call
it? I'm going to stick extra base hit again.
Okay. You're saying extra base hit. Gideon, what do you got?
I think that's an out.
Gideon thinks it's an out. He plays it safe. Okay, I'm going to give you part two. That is not the end of the clip.
That's not playing it safe, but okay.
No, playing it safe would have been to be double, but I like to live.
I like it. I like this fighting spirit.
Okay, you ready for part two?
I know.
Okay. You can score 2 points if you change and you're correct. Josh, do you want to stick with extra base hit with those extra two on the runs seconds? That doesn't sound right at all.
I'm gonna stick with it.
All right, Gideon.
I'm gonna change to a double.
Oh well, now I guarantee to lose.
At the base of the wall, and Connoisseur headed for second. He's in there with the slide.
There you go. Congratulations.
If you didn't throw that, cork in, I would have tied.
Indeed, indeed. I said I'd screw you up. I didn't say I would actually help anybody win specifically, did I? So Gideon,
well, sure I won 4-2.
Your first play of swinging a drive, you take down the all-time champion, Josh Howsam. I feel like this is not going to decrease the amount of bragging you do on a regular basis, Josh.
Nothing could do that.
Would you like to hear one more embarrassing Buck clip before we go?
Always.
Always. Here we go. Here's Buck talking about Troy Tulowitzki and some fans.
Troy was very accommodating to a group of wheelchair people that were down on the field as well. Signed up.
Wow.
Yeah,
I remember wheelchair people. Wheelchair I'm pretty people. Sure you guys did a do-over when it happened.
I see these clips in my file, and I have to use them one more time.
Oh, man.
Well, thank you for your patronage, Mr. Turk.
Thank you for having me. Keep up the great work.
It was great fun.
Thank you.
It was great fun, and we will attempt to keep up the great work. And hopefully the next person we have on can also embarrass Josh and beat them at this game. Or whatever game they
choose. It doesn't take much.
No.
Oh, the trash talk has already started.
Looking forward to my next appearance. See if he can win that time.
All right.
I doubt it, but we'll see.
Have a good night,
this
sir.
Yeah.
Take care.
Bye.
Oh, yes. I like when you taste a little bit of defeat.
You notice how quick he went to the trash talking there, though? It's like, oh, well, there you go, people. If you get on here and you get the right to just... You get bragging rights for as long until you come back.
If you followed Gideon on Twitter, you would know that it's basically a trash talk button that he hits every time. It doesn't say tweet. It says trash talk.
Well, it was well earned. He got beat me fair and square.
Got him blocked by Marcus Stroman. Will it get him blocked by Josh Howsam? We don't know. All right. Let's hit the questions, huh?
Time now to hear from our listeners.
That just seems silly.
Here are the rules. First, I ask a question, then you ask a question.
Now, how does that sound, sweetheart?
Could you repeat the question, please?
All right. So, given that, the first question that we have here is one you've actually looked up the answer to and I haven't. I'm going to ask it to you. Bad Jay's Thoughts, at Blue Jay Thoughts. I feel like it wasn't originally named Bad Jay Thoughts. What is the Jays record in one-run games from 2015 until today?
As you may have guessed, it's really, really bad.
Since all we ever do is talk about it.
Yeah, including their very good 2015 season, not in one-run games, the Blue Jays are dead last in baseball. They have a 39-60 record, which is a .394 winning percentage.
Who is the best? Do you have that on the list?
I do. Texas Rangers, .631.
Super annoying, that team. You know what I would like to say about that, though? I did not know that Texas Rangers was the right answer for that best, but look how well that did them in the playoffs. Huh? Huh? Doesn't.
Look how well did the Blue Jays.
Well.
Those games against Cleveland.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. It's sad. It's frustrating, but it doesn't matter. Honestly.
I don't know. I mean, when it's this I mean, this has been going on with the Blue Jays for a long time. And at some point, it's not just luck.
But what is it when a team is down eight to five and scores two runs in the bottom of the 10th and it's 8-7? There's your one run loss. What does that mean?
There's 100 games in this sample. I mean, that probably happens, what, in 10 of them?
I don't know. Why do close games matter more than blowouts?
But they don't. But I'm just saying, if you're habitually bad in these coin flip games, there might be a reason for it.
Okay. Any theories?
No. Yeah, it could be bullpen usage. It could be just bullpen personnel. It could be the makeup of your offense. If it's an all or nothing offense, you're more likely to lose those games because you don't get that, you know, that stringy hits together kind of thing.
I feel like the offense might be a better explanation than the. But again, you got a team that scores more runs than anybody ever scored. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. All right, we're going to change that to the two questions that are related.
Here, I'll read them so you can answer them.
All right.
The fun little ones. So there's from Connor Moore at the Seahound. If Stroman was the DH on days he didn't pitch, would he create more or less war than Babe Ruth when he split time between the certain pitcher and the outfield? And from NG Terria Blue Jays, Nick, do you see Stroman DHing on days he doesn't start?
I love our listeners. I really do. You people are awesome. You're also out of your minds. one double down the line doth not a hitter make, so to speak. I'm glad that Marcus Stroman in extra innings, when we were all apparently completely out of position players, made it count. I'm totally happy about that. I'm especially happy that he did not, I don't know, tweak his back like certain other pitchers have done in recent history. So, super cool. I'm 100% in favor of that. No, Stroman is not better than Babe Ruth. and as I recall, we have like four guys who are lined up to DH, it seems like, any given day anyway. So he'd be in the line, but not.
Yeah.
Not near the front.
So one thing I want to know. So when he came up to bat, I think it must have been Tapa. I think it was Tapa. Was like, you know, it's like Stroman, he played a position in college.
Was it shortstop?
Probably. Now he did actually get about 200 and almost 300 plate appearances, but he hit 252 with a 324 on base and a 362 slugging in college with metal bats. Him having hit doesn't mean anything.
No, it means he knows which end to grab. And as I referenced at the beginning of the podcast, it was the end of Kevin Pillar's bat he was grabbing because he knows Kevin is the hottest hitter on the team right now. It's obviously the bats.
Yeah.
All right. Grumble Pie at Free_Genie_S asks, weird question, but where has been your favorite place or most memorable place to play baseball?
I assume this is probably more of a me question than you. Yeah. So this is actually a reasonably easy one for me to answer. In fall 2002, I played at Roger Dean Stadium, which is the spring facility in Jupiter, Florida. And what made it cool was that the Marlins had just been announced to move in and taking over from the Expos, but they hadn't played a game there yet. So we got to play there before they did.
You christened the stadium before they got there. Kind of cool.
Yeah.
I have a favorite place, that I've been on the field, and it's actually Labatt Park in London. I don't know. Have you played in Labatt Park?
Many times.
Very quirky little field. It is the oldest continuously used baseball field in North America. It's really weird in that in right field, if you really hit the homer, you're actually hitting it into a river that you can't see because of a line of trees. in left field, if you really were able to crank one, I've never seen anyone do it, you could theoretically get it onto a street because there is no major barrier to that. And if you foul a ball back, it's into somebody's backyard. And yet it's been used for professional baseball as high as AA.
It's a great park.
It really is sandwiched in, but it's a beautiful little park. Not too fancy, but very pretty. Last question. You want to ask that one?
Sure. This is from Minor Leaguer. And the, oh, his current name is Coughlin Leaper. Rules question. Had Stroman closed out last night's game after pinch hitting, who would be the winning pitcher? Would Stroman get a save?
Okay. I was not watching, to be honest, to see how the double switch or how the switches
went. So here's what happened. The score was tied and Stroman pinch hit for the pitcher and he scored the go-ahead run.
Okay.
Now the question is, after having scored that run, if he had instead stayed in the game to pitch, what would happen?
So as soon as he pinch hits, he's the pitcher of record. Because he's in the pitcher spot. So he should get the win.
So here's the interesting thing here. if a hit, what happens then, according to this rule, the way you just said it, if a hitter pinch hits and then the new pitcher comes in, does the hitter get the win?
No, because he hasn't thrown any pitches.
The answer is no. Now, technically, the way the rule is usually really done, Stroman would get a save. But my only actual evidence of this and how this works is from the old MVP 2005 baseball game, where actually in the situation, if the pitcher pinch hits and stays in the game, he gets the win.
Alrighty.
I'm pretty sure that's accurate, though. I think he would have been the winning pitcher because he would have been the player of record when the run scored and then stayed in the game.
Right. That would be to me, that's the logic. But, and I'm just not going to go with the MVP 2005 interpretation of the rules as any kind of gold standard, as it were, for rules interpretation.
That's how I would inflate my players' win totals. I would make, I my creative player, I would bring myself into pinch run or pinch hit for the pitcher, score a run, stay in the game for one out and switch out. It's all about those padded video game stats.
Doing, man? What is wrong with you? Okay, well, now we know a little bit more about Josh and his competitive nature. Maybe we'll leave MVP 2005 there. Are you? Is that all our questions? Nothing trickled in.
That is all our questions.
All right, we're going to go and we're going to hand out a gold star.
I think that's rather brilliant.
So I did good, right?
I mean, I would have thought you'd get a gold star.
You enjoy that. You've earned it.
Oops. Don't ignore the oops. gold star. Have we ever handed out a gold star to an opposing player?
I doubt it.
I don't think we've done that. We're going to hand out a gold star to Albert Pujols of the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim for mentoring Devin Travis, which was a super cool story. So, around the batting cage, Pujols spots Travis, approaches him, and basically says, I know who you are, I've seen you, I know you're new to the league, I know you've been scuffling this year, I know you know how to hit, you're going to be a great player, you just keep hustling and you do your best out there, you keep swinging the baseball. He really did not have to do that.
Yeah, I mean, and that meant the world to Travis. I mean, this is a guy that is as lock a Hall of Famer as there is in the sport. First ballot, 95%+ of the ballots, and the only idiots won't vote for Albert Pujols.
Yep.
So, and this is going to the young guy and saying, hey, I know you're good. Like, I'm aware of your talent. I mean, that's got to be the world. I mean, and Travis said it did. And then, after Travis hit a home run in the next game, Pujols called him over and basically said, see, told you, just keep playing it and let it come to you, which, I mean, that's really cool.
You could see him do it. Pujols came to second base and Travis came to cover second. And like Pujols had hit a double and he put his hands on Travis's shoulders right in front of whatever 20,000 people and said, hey, we're competitors, but we really are doing the same job. Yeah, just that is classy beyond belief. And it gets you a gold star, Albert. We'll print one up for you if you really want. Though I feel like your $200 million contracts, you probably don't need a gold star from us. But we do appreciate it, I think, when a player who is so far above the talent level of the average player, who really doesn't, he's proved everything he needs to prove in baseball, is still thinking about what it is like for another player to start in the game and have a tough go of it.
Yeah. It's just really cool.
Yeah. So on that note, I would ask you, do you have a final thought?
I do. And it's just that Madison Bumgarner, we didn't do a do-over this week, but what an idiot. I'm sorry. You know, he's driving around on his motorcycle, injures his shoulder, and he's going to be out for 2 months.
So he hurt his ribs, his shoulder, and something else, didn't he? I don't know if there was more in there. But my question really is, on that list of unusual baseball injuries, what does it slot in between for you?
Well, here's the thing. If it was just a normal motorcycle, like, okay, fine. But he was dirt biking. It's not the same. I should make that clear.
So is it above dreaming about spiders and crashing through a plate glass coffee table?
I still maintain that Glenn Allen Hill was not sleeping. I think he was just bombed and crashed through a table. But absent any confirmation of that, that's still the weirdest one.
We do have Jimmy Key falling off the ladder while painting and hurting his wrist. I remember that one. Frostbite. Is it about? Is it worse than frostbite?
Okay, frostbite. No, frostbite's got to be up there because it was the trainer who gave Henderson frostbite with an ice pack.
They're so bad. You would think that these people had never had any kind of injury at all, but before these one obscure.
Those ones were really weird and quirky. This one was just really dumb.
All right. So do you think Madison Bumgarner's next contract has a no dirt biking during the season policy?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. So I will once again, before we head on out, I will once again reference the Patreon at www.patreon.com/turfpod. As you know from earlier, you can, with a donation and support, get a chance to come on play a game with us live on the podcast. If you're not into that, there are some other awards and rewards that that you can help improve the podcast with, so go check that out. And then I can say that you have been Joshua Housam at Joshua Housam, and I have been Greg Wisniewski at Coolhead2010, and our guest was Gideon Turk at Gideon Turk, and this was Artificial Turf Wars episode number 54, and we will see you again next week.